America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced.
Well, I think our official theme music for the day, or at least for the first hour here, should probably be the old Rod Serling theme. I mean, it is absolutely incredible, some of the stuff that is going on in the non-reality-based community. For example, Laura Bush on Larry King. Let me just pause myself for a moment and say good morning or afternoon, wherever you may be in the country or around the world. Greetings, Tom Hartman here with you. Laura Bush last night on Larry King Live.
And now, but of course, what we see on television is the one bombing a day that discourages everybody.
The one bombing a day over in Iraq. And, yeah, I mean, you know, isn't that a terrible thing? The one bombing a day. And unfortunately, in October, I think we've been averaging, what, about 185 bombings a day? Back in August, it was around 170. You go back to April, it was around 80. We can go all the way back to August, February, in the 40s and 50s. I mean, you go back to 03. Well, then in July of 03, it was 8 bombings a day. But now we're at 185 bombings a day. So somebody needs to call up Laura Bush and say, reality calling, reality calling. Now, see, this is, as Ron Suskind noted in, I believe it was in the book that he wrote with the former Secretary of the Treasury. He said the aide... So this is a quote from Suskind. He said, the aides said that guys like me were in what we call the reality-based community, which he defined as people who believe that solutions emerge from your judicious study of discernible reality. The aide told Mr. Suskind, that's not the way the world really works anymore. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. So this is the new conservative worldview. We create our own reality. And apparently, actually, they're even trying to recreate their own reality. The Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, www.cpac.org is their website, is bringing together, and by the way, I will be there on Thursday and Friday of this week. I will be broadcasting this program live. The only liberal on the radio row. They're doing a radio row, right? They sent out this thing to all talk show hosts all over the country. Hey, you want to come here? You know, Dick Cheney's going to be here. Karl Rove. We're going to have all these, you know, Grover Norquist. The whole crowd, right? Hail, hail, the gang's all here. And, you know, all these speakers and just, you know, the whole bit. And it's all going to be there. And if you want to come and do your radio show from here, show up. And so, in fact, you know, Dick Cheney, let's see, here's the official invited speakers. Dick Cheney, Sean Hannity, Mitch McConnell, Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, David Horowitz, Congressman Mike Pence, Newt Gingrich, Phyllis Schlafly, Wayne Pierre, and many more. Yeah. So, you know, they contacted us, and as they did every other talk show host in the country, I guess, and said, would you like to be part of our radio row? Would you like to do your show from the CPAC conference? And I said, sure, of course. So Thursday and Friday, I will be in Washington, D.C., broadcasting a show from there. So over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org, they talk about one of the panels that the CPAC conference is going to have on Thursday. And it's called The Left's Repeated Campaign Against the American Soldier. That's the title of the panel. This is going to be a really interesting conference. I am looking forward to this. Retired Colonel George E. Bud Day, the guy who referred to John Kerry as Benedict Arnold in the Swift Boat ads. He says, my view is he will basically go down in history sometime as the Benedict Arnold of 1971. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mary Jane McManus, prominent and outspoken member of the Swift Boat Vets, she appeared in their national TV ad campaign and said, John Kerry gave aid and comfort to the enemy by advocating their negotiating points to our government. And Carlton Sherwood, a former Bush administration official, what a surprise, Sherwood was the producer of the television film Stolen Honor, which was broadcast by the Sinclair Group and contained a host of smears and lies about John Kerry. It was basically an anti-Acari attack masquerading as a documentary. And that from MediaMatters.org, by the way, that comment about it. So here we have, you know, the reality-based world being left behind by conservatives, and we'll get some of as many as we can on the program on Thursday and Friday, and we'll just check in with them. Maybe we can find some sense of reality there. Sometimes you wonder, you know, are we getting close to something like what happened tragically with the French Revolution? You had Louis and Marie. Marie Antoinette and Louis, what was it? Louis the 16th, I believe it was. 14th, 15th, 16th. Wait, I forget. I can't keep and Louis straight, whichever, who was the king of France at the time. And they were having these bread riots. I mean, outside the bakeries, they were having food riots in France because people could not get food. And at that point in time, the idea in the mind of royalty was that their job was to represent the country by living high so that everybody would be proud to be a Frenchman because France was so prosperous. And so they just, you know, Marie and Louis just lived high on the hog and had all these parties and did all this stuff. That's what they thought their job description was. Well, the people kind of disagreed. And in 1792, that was the end of the monarchy. And this was followed by the Reign of Terror in 1793 and 94, and eventually Napoleon, you know, overthrew the Directory, Robespierre, and the whole bit in 1799, and then a whole other brand new set of problems came along for France. But this is what happens when people are completely out of touch. And you know, as Keith Olbermann went off last night at some length with Condi Rice, and justifiably so, for saying when she was on Fox News and he says, she said out loud with an adult present. Yes. Condi Rice on Fox News saying, it would be for us to say, as the Senate, as the United States Senate wants to say right now, there is this debate going on in the United States Senate. For us to, and the debate is, should we, since the mission seems to have changed in Iraq from the original resolution in 2002, that the Senate voted to give and the House voted to give George Bush authorization to threaten to use, or to use for that matter if he needed to, force in Iraq in order to force them to submit to the weapons inspectors and whatnot. Yeah. That original resolution was based on the theory, or is based on the premise that there might be actual weapons of mass destruction, there might be actually things in Iraq that we should be concerned about, weapons of mass destruction, ties to Al-Qaeda, nuclear bombs, chemical, biological, well, you know, all this stuff. I mean, you know, Bush going on and on and on about how important all this was. And none of that has turned out to be true. There was no association between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. In fact, Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden hated each other. In fact, the reason that Osama bin Laden got deported, got thrown out of Saudi Arabia and stripped of his Saudi citizenship and dropped off in Sudan, the country where his mother was born, by King, what was it, King Fahd at the time, or King Faisal, whoever it was, by the King of Saudi Arabia, was because after he had successfully, with our help, repelled the Russians in Afghanistan with his Mujahideen and his Al-Qaeda, he went back to Saudi Arabia and he said, okay, now that he'd become an absolute religious fanatic under the tutelage of Ayman al-Zawahiri, the pediatrician who had gone, you know, to Afghanistan to be with him, he says, there's this guy who's running in an Arab country, a Muslim country, right next door to us, and he allows women to go around with their elbows exposed. I mean, that's obscene. That's an obscenity. We can't allow that. And he lets women go to school, and they can have professional positions. And, yeah, he's a dictator, but he lets men drink alcohol and shave their beards. And this is terrible. We have to attack him. And so Osama bin Laden gathered together his merry band in Saudi Arabia to attack Saddam Hussein in Iraq. And he had a couple of hundred guys who were heading for the Iraqi border when the Saudis said, whoa, no, you don't. We're not going to have a war with Iraq. Saudi Arabia has a border with Iraq, of course, a huge one. And so they grab Osama bin Laden and off to Sudan he goes. So not only was there no connection, there was nothing. So Condi says, well, you know, this would be like after World War II changing the mission. Well, after World War II, we did change the mission. It was called the Marshall Plan, as Keith Olbermann points out. So anyhow, that, conservatives' problem with the reality-based world right now. Hopefully, they can get it fixed. Maybe we can help them out a little bit. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
I hope the days come easy and the moments pass slow, and each road leads you where you want to go. And if you're faced with a choice and you have to choose, I hope you choose the one that means the most to you. And if one door opens to another door closed, I hope you keep on walking till you find the window. If it's cold outside, show the world the warmth of your smile. But more than anything, more than anything, my wish for you is that this life becomes all that you wanted to your dreams.
And welcome back to the radio support group of by and for we the people of the United States of America. My wish for you is that we can all collectively together bring some peace to this planet. Boy, boy, do we need it. Chitta Parsi was an aide to Bob Ney. And there's actually a conspiracy theory circulating. And I've heard this from some folks, I don't know how to say this, on the inside, that one of the reasons why the Republicans didn't come to Bob Ney's defense, and in fact, one of the reasons why, this is the conspiracy theory, that one of the reasons why he was prosecuted, successfully prosecuted and thrown in jail when so many other Republicans who were committing crimes were not, was because he was the only member of the House of Representatives who spoke Farsi. And he does. And therefore, in 2003, he was the guy to whom the Swiss ambassador brought a message from the Iranian government saying, we would like to help you guys out. We, Iran, would like to work with the United States to help bring about peace in the Middle East between Palestine and Israel, to bring about peace in Iraq, to stabilize Iraq. You know, it's in our interest, it's in your interest, let's work together. And in fact, we'd like to be allies with the United States. I mean, I'm badly paraphrasing, I'm sure. So this fellow, Chitta Parsi, who was working for Bob Ney, he was an advisor to Bob Ney, and he met with Tim Goldemann, who was the ambassador from Switzerland, and was given this proposal. And he then gave it to Bob Ney, the congressman, who speaks Farsi, you know, who has some, like, ties to Iran, right? If you speak Farsi, I mean, Iran's the only country where you speak Farsi. And Bob, according to Chitta Parsi's testimony yesterday on Amy Goodman's program, the Democracy Now!, Congressman Bob Ney, hand-delivered to Karl Rove in the White House this message, and within 2 hours, Karl Rove called back, and they had a discussion about it. And Karl Rove said basically that it was an intriguing proposal. He wanted to know if it was authentic. And then Chitta Parsi says, well, according to many people I've interviewed in the Bush administration, they did have a discussion about this at the highest level in the Bush administration. Now, typically when people say the highest level, what they mean is the office of the president and or the vice president. So he says they did have a discussion about this at the highest level in the Bush administration, and basically the hard line of the Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld basically ensured that they would not proceed with the negotiations. In fact, they actually reprimanded the Swiss ambassador for having delivered it. He said, I would agree. It was absolutely unthinkable that a proposal of this importance would not have reached the Secretary of State. Now, see, Connie Rice right now is denying that she ever even knew about this. Although she was, at the time, she wasn't Secretary of State. She was the National Security Advisor. And, or no, she, maybe she was Secretary of State, because he says, particularly mindful of the fact that Flint Leverett, who was at the NSC at the time, he was working for, did see it. His wife, Hillary Mann, who was also at the NSC, did see it, who had a discussion with Colin Powell about it, who was then Secretary of State, according to his testimony at our conference 2 weeks ago. So I find it highly unlikely, says Trita Parsi, that they did not see it. Beyond unlikely that they didn't see it. So, you know, the reality-based world shaking again. And then in yesterday's New York Times, the editorial observer, why have so many U.S. attorneys been fired? It looks a lot like politics. The Congressional Research Service, this is a branch of Congress, nonpartisan branch of Congress that can do research on behalf of Congress. They looked at 486 U.S. attorneys who've been confirmed since 1981, and no more than three have been forced out in 25 years, except for the last 7 months. The last two or three months, excuse me, where seven have been forced out. The prosecutors who prosecuted, for example, Duke Cunningham. And another one down in Arkansas who was replaced by a Karl Rove guy. And Arkansas, Hillary Clinton running for president. Interesting. Political hack down there. Now, prosecutor. Oh, isn't that interesting? Or are the Republicans trying to position people to run for political office? Is this candidate recruitment, speculates the New York Times. Are they just helping out their buddies? In other words, stopping investigations of Republicans who've committed crimes. Or is this all about presidential politics? As I said, you know, Little Rock, is this the beginning of going after Hillary? And finally, and then we'll be taking your calls at 866-303-2270. You can drop by our live chat room at TomHartmann.com as well. Finally, the Iraqi bomb-making ability. Another collision with the reality-based world. Right after this, 27 minutes past the hour.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartmann Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
A little bit of truck, a little bit of hound dog, and a little bit of luck. A little bit of bacon, a little bit of beans, a little bit of you loving up on me. A little bit of how it's supposed to be, a little bit of life. A little bit of backseat, a little bit of moon. A little bit of radio, I'm going boom, boom, boom.
And welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartmann here with you. 1-866-303-2270, our phone number. With this last story, I just have to share with you this, the dueling headlines. Okay, dueling headlines, dueling stories. Here in the New York Times, the headline says, U.S. displays bomb parts said to be made in Iran. Okay. So, they're making bombs in Iran. And they're showing up in Iraq. But then you actually read the story, and it says, in a dusty field near the Baghdad airport on Monday, the American military laid out a display of hundreds of components for assembling deadly roadside bombs, its latest effort to embarrass the country it contends is supplying the material to arm Shiite groups here, Iran. And they talk about these EFPs, which throw out a high-speed blob of copper. But then you read a little down into the article, and you find, but while the find gave experts much more information about the makings of the EFPs, which the American military had repeatedly argued must originate in Iran, the cache also included items that appeared to cloud the issue. Among the confusing elements were cardboard boxes of the gray plastic PVC tubes used to make the canisters. The boxes appeared to contain shipments of tubes directly from factories in the Middle East, none of them in Iran. One box said in English that the tubes had been made in the United Arab Emirates. And another in Arabic said plastic made in Haditha, a restive Sunni town on the Euphrates River in Iraq. So what? We're supposed to bomb the United Arab Emirates? So anyhow, the dueling headlines. The headline in the New York Times, U.S. displays bomb parts said to be made in Iran. The headline in the Wall Street Journal, U.S. find stokes fears of Iraqis' bomb-making ability. This find, separate from one in the southern city of Hill a week ago, is forcing U.S. officials to reassess their belief that such bombs are being built in Iran and smuggled fully assembled into Iraq. Captain Kate Clayton Combs, who led the raid, said, "We originally thought these came into Iraq already created. Now that intelligence has been totally relooked." Interesting. Interesting. U.S. commander said they hadn't found evidence linking the weapons to Iran's government, army, or paramilitary forces, a connection the U.S. has yet to firmly establish despite its accusations. Tehran has denied the White House allegations and has accused Washington of fabricating evidence to justify a possible military strike on Iran. And so here we are. The reality-based world collides tragically with the Bush administration. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Tom. Just incidentally, the NewsHour on PBS last night reported that the number of DAs pushed out is up to 8, that they got another one yesterday. They had a pretty good discussion about it, a debate. So if anybody's interested, I think it's PBS.org, the NewsHour from last night.
Yeah, these are the attorneys who are investigating basically high crimes and misdemeanors. I mean, some of these crimes that they're looking into could reach all the way up to the White House, and they're dropping like flies.
Yeah.
And this is all because of a paragraph, or a sentence at least, maybe a paragraph, that was inserted into the Patriot Act in its most recent incarnation last year. That, as far as I've been able to tell, no member of Congress even knew was there that allows the president to just, you know, toss in somebody.
There's a story behind that, too. That's not why I called. But the reason that's in there was that a deal made with Arlen Specter to hold his position as chairman of the judiciary, they foisted on him an aide, a very right-wing conservative aide, as his chief of staff. And that's the guy who crafted this at the White House, is at Gonzalez's urging. So there's a real lot of machinations behind this. But what I really called about is,
sure,
the APA, American Psychological Association, released a study yesterday.
Yes.
Examining the treatment of our veterans for PTSD and other psychological problems incurred by serving in combat. And they found that while some treatments are effective, the main reason that it's on the whole ineffective is that up to 40% of the slots for psychologists are unfilled. That this is why the returning soldiers have such a long time waiting for appointments and end up not getting the treatment they need. And you could contrast this, or rather compare this, with Bush's budget that he put out a couple of weeks ago for veterans benefits for the next two years, which has big cuts in it. And you think about the hollowness of the claims that they support the troops, that we're the people who are trying to get the people home. We're unpatriotic and cowardly, but it just reminds me of, it's sort of the way they treat the unborn, you know. They're big on preserving life as long as the fetus isn't born. Once it's born, it can go hungry and have no health care. Same with the soldiers. They're good for cannon fodder, but once they come back, we don't want to care about them if we're Republicans. It's sad.
Yeah, well said, Charlie. I appreciate the call. And carrying it forward, the left's repeated campaign against the American soldier, one of the topics that's going to be at the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC.org, where I will be broadcasting from on Thursday and Friday. Should be interesting. In fact, along those lines, Scott in Houston, Texas. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, just wanted to run two things by real quick. The first one was, it's funny that Bush makes all this hubbub about terrorism when I mean, let's face it, we live in a country with the School of Americas. For how many years have, you know, especially in the Boston area, have the American Irish up there been sending weapons and money to the IRA to fight the British? So it's kind of funny that he would all of a sudden get so indignant. But the main reason I was calling was, I congratulate you on going to that radio conference. I'm in Houston. I go through this on a daily basis. I'm obviously in the belly of the beast down here.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it makes for good debate. I mean, I'm constantly surrounded by conservatives with no facts or ill-informed. And, you know, when you start actually laying out some of the facts, you can kind of see little chinks in their armor. All of a sudden they start, you know, seeing your point of view. You know, they'll say what great fans they are of the war and what supporters. And then you ask them, you know, okay, if you're a big, huge supporter of the war, give me the name of five GIs that have died. Blank stare.
Yeah.
Give me the name of three. Blank stare. Name just one man that has died in Iraq. I mean, you would think at least Patrick Tillman would come to mind, but they don't know.
Yeah, so, although he died in Afghanistan, actually, didn't he?
Yeah.
Close enough.
Was it Afghanistan? Possibly, you're correct.
I think so, yeah.
But, I mean,
But your point made, yeah.
Right, they can't name anything about. They don't even have any idea.
Yeah, but that's not how I would debate it, Scott. I mean, it's an interesting point, but I'm not. I could name a couple because I know a few people here in Oregon whose kids have died. But it's and in fact, actually, you know, and a staffer from Air America, Andy Parhamovich, died in Iraq, but not in combat. I mean, she was a civilian, but.
Right.
I think a stronger argument is, you know, why. Why are we there? And then almost no matter what the answer is, then, you know, oh, weapons of mass destruction. Well, then why aren't we in Pakistan? Or Al-Qaeda, then why aren't we, you know, in Dubai, you know, or why aren't
Saudi
we in
Arabia,
Pakistan?
Right.
Or Saudi Arabia, right, yeah. And so that's where I would take it. But, Scott, you know, good point, and thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And my debating conservatives, this is something that I've been doing, I guess, frankly, all my life. I do a morning show on AM 620 KPOJ here, and I was just mentioning this to Heidi, my co-host, a few minutes ago, that when my dad died this last summer, he died in his living room, and I was there with my three brothers and Louise, my wife, and I think one of our sisters-in-law, and As he was dying, I'm sitting there with my hand on his shoulder, and as he's drawing his last breath, and over my shoulder is a picture of, you know, his pictures of the kids and whatnot, and there's a picture of me shaking hands with the Pope, and right next to it is a picture of George W. Bush on the aircraft carrier USS Abraham Lincoln. I mean, you know, he was a Republican his whole life. And I think that if, you know, what I learned is that you can debate somebody, if I can debate somebody I love, my father, then I could certainly debate somebody I, you know, just like or don't even, you know, just somebody else. And I think that it's so important that, number one, we have models of what it's like to have civil conversation in the United States, because so much has become gotcha. It has so devolved to gotcha. You know, when John Stewart made his comment on Crossfire about, you know, you guys are harming America, because it was all about you know, my talking points versus your talking points, that kind of thing. And it's like not a healthy place to go, frankly, in my opinion. So I think that, number one, we need some kind of a role model for reasonable dialogue where there's not blood on the floor when we're all done, where we can still be friends, we're still be human beings to each other afterwards. And secondly, that engaging people in debate and dialogue, in my mind, it's not even about winning ultimately. My goal, and I do this almost every day, debate conservatives on this program, my goal isn't so much to trash them or make them look stupid or silly or anything like that. If anything, I want them to you know, share humanity with me. My goal is to highlight the issues, the real issues, not the, you know, who's smarter or not smarter, who's got the better talking points or not. The real issues, so that our listeners can understand the relative points of view and make up their own mind about, you know, where they stand on these issues. Now, you know, obviously I will share my take on every single issue. I mean, that's the whole point of it. But I think that it's an important and healthy thing that we need to be doing. And so that's why, and in fact, you know, in the last week or so, I've picked up from Al Franken, we've picked up a bunch of new radio stations on the program, and people who haven't heard that before, I gotten a few emails from people going, you know, what are you doing here, Tar? You're putting conservatives on the radio. Well, the reason why is because this is the conversation, in my opinion, that America needs to be having. We need to be having these kind of conversations, and we need to be having them in a rational way that actually talks about the issues, not, oh, you idiot, right? So, 45 minutes past the hour. Back with your calls, really, please.
Yeah.
The new Constitution? The new revolution?
No, we're not going to be fooled again. Welcome back, Mike, in Memphis, Tennessee. You are live and on the air on the Tom Hartman program. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey,
oh, hang on.
You there?
Okay, great. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you listening? Okay, I just wanted to challenge you earlier. You said that there had only been three U.S. attorneys changed since 81, and where I live in Memphis, Tennessee, every time there's a change in the presidency, there's a change in U.S. attorneys. Now, I'm driving down the road, so
you're
I can't
absolutely
do
right.
research. But I know for a fact there's been more than three, if not in my own area. And, you know, that's...
No, let me just interrupt you, Mike. That you're absolutely right. U.S. attorneys are typically changed when the president comes, when a new president comes in. And that's it. And going all the way back to 1981, outside of when the president changes, there have only been three times when U.S. attorneys have been changed, and each one of those seems to have been for cause. Now, in the last 4 or 5 months, ever since the Democrats took control of the House and Senate, now we have what? We're 7 or 8 U.S. attorneys have been fired,
and
that's
heard,
never happened before. Never happened before.
Well, I pay attention to the news. I read the newspaper and I listen to the radio, and I recall a couple of those that I've heard about were replaced because they were basically violating the law, and they have to, they're the federal prosecutors. They go after people for federal crimes. They go after elected officials, government officials, people that are supposed to oversee the good of the people. And because
Duke Cunningham.
A few of these I've heard about have basically been brought to question because of wrongdoings on their part. So
no, absolutely case, not. Absolutely not. I realize that there are right-wing talk hosts out there who are putting that spin out there. But if
that's the evening news, which is not right-wing. That is the
okay. Well,
news.
You know, I mean, read this is from the liberal press, the New York Times. The firing of H.E. Cummins II, for example, is raising as many questions as Ms. Lamb. So they start out with Carol Lamb. She was the former U.S. attorney for San Diego. Smart, tireless, very good at her job. She busted Duke Cunningham, a guilty plea. 2 weeks ago, she indicted Dusty Fago, the number three official at the CIA. I mean, this could reach to Tenet. This could reach as far as to the White House. She got fired. She had just gotten every single one of these, by the way, every single one of these seven U.S. attorneys, excuse me, six of these seven U.S. attorneys who've been fired have all seven of them, who all received strong job evaluations recently. In other words, all of them have recently been praised for what they're doing. The New York Times, I'm quoting now from an article in the New York Times, it is hard to call what's happening anything other than a political purge. It's an example of how the Bush administration, everything from rebuilding a hurricane-ravaged city to allocating Homeland Security dollars to invading Iraq, is sacrificed to partisan politics and winning elections. U.S. attorneys have enormous power. The decision to investigate or indict can bankrupt a business or destroy a life. They must be and long have been insulated from political pressures. Although appointed by the president, once in office, they are almost never asked to leave until a new president is elected. The Congressional Research Service, that's a nonpartisan arm of Congress, has confirmed how unprecedented these firings are. It found that 486 U.S. attorneys confirmed since 1981, no more than three were forced out in similar ways. Three in 25 years compared with seven in the last few months since the election. And it's not just the large numbers, writes Adam Cohen in the New York Times. The firing of H.E. Cummins III raises as many questions as Mrs. Lamb's. Mr. Cummins, one of the most distinguished lawyers in Arkansas, respected by Republicans and Democrats alike, he was forced out to make room for J. Timothy Griffin. Who's J. Timothy Griffin? He's Karl Rove's former deputy. And he's now going to be, you know, looking over what's going on in Arkansas, which is, where Hillary Clinton's from. No, I'm sorry. I'm not buying it, Mike. This is something stinks here, and it's something political that is stinking. It's not capital N, not a good thing. Jake in Arcata, California. Hey, Jake, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how's it going? I would just like to come to the First Lady's defense, if I could. You know, I do understand that Laura Bush is preoccupied these days with George W. Bush's affair with Condoleezza Rice. But to say that only one bombing a day in Iraq, that's what's going on over there, that is just ridiculous. She needs to apologize to the family members of all our soldiers who are getting killed over there as we speak.
Yeah. You know, let me actually speak in her defense for a moment. I do think that on the one hand, her comment demonstrates a startling disconnect from reality. Again, here's her comment on Larry King Live.
What we see on television is the one bombing a day that discourages everybody.
Now, what she might have meant is that, you know, TV will go every day to the most spectacular bombing Just like, you know, hey, there might be 10 murders this week in New York City, but the one that we saw was the one where they happened to get good footage, you know, that kind of thing. She might have just been talking about how the press, you know, let's cut her a little bit of slack here in the micro. But in the macro sense, I think that she's completely out of touch to even, you know, to suggest that this is something that is disproportionate, that we shouldn't be concerned about all these bombings.
Right. Well, it seems entirely typical of the Bush administration. They're all out of touch. People aren't talking about ending the war. They're talking about starting a new war with Iran, Tom.
I agree with you, Jake. I agree with you. And that's why I brought up the French Revolution, because Louis and Marie Antoinette, when their advisors said to them, you know, the people out there are getting ready to revolt. We are looking at the possibility of, you know, big time problems here. You know, there's this guy, Mr. Guillotine. He's got a new invention. The response of the French court was, you know, well, the famous response, let them eat cake, right, which attributed to Marie Antoinette. But basically the response was, no, we're doing what we're supposed to do. You know, don't bother us with reality. And I'm very concerned that there's not a court jester. It used to be that the court jester was the one person who by law, by constitutional law in many constitutional monarchies, could say anything to the king. He was the only person who could say anything to the king, because he framed everything as a joke. But there was at least somebody who could say anything to the king. And I am concerned that in this Bush White House, there is nobody who can say something to the king that might be bad news. And if that's the case, and we have a president that is as out of touch as the First Lady, we're in big trouble. 57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Presents the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced.
Okay, so let's just do a reality check here. Welcome back, by the way. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This guy, I'll tell you who he is in just a second. This guy has said, and I quote, he said, "We are all happy when U.S. soldiers are killed in Iraq week in and week out. The killing of U.S. soldiers in Iraq is legitimate and obligatory." Yes, he said that. He said, "The oil axis is present in most of the U.S. administration, beginning with its president, vice president, and top advisors, including Condoleezza Rice, who is oil-colored, while the axis of Jews is present with Paul Wolfowitz, the leading hawk who is inciting America to occupy and destroy Iraq." End of quote. Yes, he said that. And he said, in quote, "In November 2003, the United States revoked..." Oh, I'm sorry. This is not a quote from him. This is just a factoid. "In November 2003, we revoked his diplomatic visa for wishing out loud that Paul Wolfowitz had been killed in a Baghdad rocket attack." I'm talking about Walid Jumblatt. WALIDJUMBLATT. He's a member of the parliament in Lebanon. Walid Jumblatt, who yesterday visited with George W. Bush in the White House, and then went over to the American Enterprise Institute, one of the major cheerleading organizations for the war in Iraq, and gave a speech about regime change in Syria. This is the guy who said, "We're all happy when U.S. soldiers are killed in Iraq week in and week out. The killing of U.S. soldiers in Iraq is legitimate and obligatory." I think we have a problem with our priorities. I really do. Speaking of our priorities, Robert Peters, with Morality and Media, is, I think, with us. It looks...
We're scheduled next segment.
Ah, okay. No, we'll take him. We'll just do it right now. Robert Peters is with us here with Morality and Media. MoralityandMedia.org is the website. Robert, welcome to the program.
Me.
Hey, Robert. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, great. Good to have you with us. you have written, ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, the International Regulatory Body for the Internet, is trying to come up with a .XXX domain for pornography to kind of put it off in its own red light district. And if I'm getting this correctly, you're suggesting that this is a bad idea. Is that the case?
Yes.
Okay, why?
Well, there are actually four reasons, but two. The first is that the system isn't mandatory. In other words, the pornographers will not be required to go into this XXX domain. And our expectation is that most of them won't. In fact, we would expect that many of them will. Well, I should qualify that. We would expect that many of them will go into the XXX domain, but they'll also keep their .com domain. So it's not like, you know, zoning of an adult business in real space, you know, a local community where the law requires these businesses to be, you know, located only in certain areas.
But don't you think over time that the market is going to create that? I mean, I can see where, you know, Playboy, for example, would want to hang on to Playboy.com, but if somebody was a consumer of pornography and they knew that there was a .XXX domain, I would think that they would do all their shopping over there.
Yeah, but, you know, the idea of this thing isn't to make it easier for adults to find pornography, as if that's hard. The idea for this thing is to protect children. And yet, they're proposing, and that both ICANN and the guy that's proposing this XXX domain have made it clear they do not see this as a mandatory system. So how the heck is it going to protect kids?
Well, obviously it won't. I'm not sure that that's the specific suggestion of it, is that it would protect kids. I mean, that's not the way that it's being promoted. It's being promoted as, let's try to get as much as possible of this stuff off the main web and into a specific domain where people won't be surprised by it. I mean, it used to be that if you went to whitehouse.com, you hit a porn site.
Well, yeah.
You know, the guy gave it up a year ago, but I mean, there's, you know, some of the oddest and most normal sounding .com domains are porn sites. And let's create a separate place for this. I mean, isn't really your concern as president of Morality and Media, moralityandmedia.org, that there shouldn't be any pornography on the internet?
Well, I tell you, to me, our world would be a better place if we didn't have any pornography on the internet or any place else. But I came to the personal conclusion some years ago that probably wasn't a realistic goal. So
what about the study? If I could just ask you this, Clemson University did this study. Professor Todd Kendall, reported on it, that for every 10% increase in net access to pornography on the internet, there was about a 7.3% decrease in reported rapes. They looked at communities all across the United States and looked at when they got wired for the internet and at what levels people were accessing pornography. And they found that as the use of pornography, online pornography went up, rape went down.
You know, I tell you, I remember taking a quick look at that study and having some very obvious questions about the thinking of it, but off the top of my head, I don't remember. But there was, you know, just very last year sometime, there was a statistic that rape had declined 85% since 1972. That was one set of statistics that was based on home interviews. But there's another statistic which is compiled by law enforcement agencies around the country. And not that either one of the statistics is perfect, but according to when rapes occur, they're supposed to be reported to a central office. According to that statistic, rape increased 45% since 1972. So here you've got two recognized, you know, respected surveys, both to some extent conducted by government.
Well, the population in the United States.
Decline, and the other is telling us 45% increase. I tell you.
Yeah, okay, all right. So, it may be one of those kind of things where figures can lie and liars can figure and all that. I mean, who knows? But, you know, back to the larger issue, Robert, because we only have a couple of minutes here before I have to take a break. We're talking with Robert Peters, the president of Morality and Media. It seems to me that there is a misplaced virtual hysteria around sexuality in the United States, that we are not so concerned about violence, we're not so concerned about politicians lying to us, we're not so concerned about things that I think are truly pornographic, but we are concerned about something that everybody does. I mean, ultimately, virtually everybody as an adult will participate in sex, and yet I don't think any of us will ever participate in murder. And yet you can see murder on TV all the time. You can see murder on the Internet. You can see murder in movies. And we can't see sex? I don't get it.
Well, I tell you, I'm not, you know, part of my thing on the violence, most people wouldn't know this, but up until about 1940, many states had laws that prohibited certain types of violent entertainment because of the belief, I think, well-founded, that it could lead to crime in real life. But once again, the Supreme Court intervened and struck down a New York law, and in the process invalidated the laws, similar laws, in 16 states. And then late in the, you know, 40 years later, whatever, in the 60s, Supreme Court struck down another law intended to restrict children's access to violent entertainment. And since then, every effort at the state and local level to restrict children's access to violent entertainment has been invalidated by the courts. I'm not a fan of sick violent entertainment. I'm certainly not advocating that there should not be any type of violence in media. But, you know, in real life, people engage.
Well, why should there be?
Real life, people engage in violent, you know, in sex in private. They don't do it out in front of an audience. Not in real life, that's with violence.
But they at least engage in sex. People
don't do it in front of other people, and that's, you know.
Well, Gunsmoke, somebody gets shot out on the street. I mean, that's not something that any of us are going to engage in.
Well, I tell you,
in private or public.
Coincidentally, somebody sent me an article of an opinion. There was some survey in Canada that they said that, you know, a third of boys, and this is the word in the headline, are heavy into pornography, not looking at it. And these are the ones that admitted to it, but heavy in, a third of boys.
Now, is this a consequence of the availability of the Internet, or does this go back to 1950 or whatever the year was in the 60s, I guess it was, the Playboy first came out? Or for that matter, there was pornography during the Victorian era.
I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and my father brought Playboy into the home, and I got into it in grade school, and I got hooked on it. I tell you, interestingly, I was hooked on Playboy foldouts until I came to law school in New York City.
Well, Robert, you're a normal guy.
Immediately, I got hooked into hardcore pornography.
And do you think that's bad?
Yeah, no, but one difference is that, I tell you, when you and I were kids, Playboy, and, you know, that was the big thing. Now, kids, I'll tell you, I can guarantee you that what Playboy depicts and what used to be on 42nd Street in the adult bookstores is shockingly different. Today, these kids have access to this stuff on the Internet that used to only be in an adult bookstore, and they're accessing it in early and middle grade school.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't disagree with you that there should be some concern about that. We should have a dialogue about it. Robert Peters, moralityandmedia.org. Robert, thanks for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Is the problem sex or is it repression? I lived in Europe for a year, in Germany, on the continent. And I remember Stern or Der Spiegel, one or the other, it's kind of like the Newsweek and Time magazines of Germany, one or the other, had a cover story where they had a man and a woman standing there, totally stark naked, full frontal, looking at the camera, head to toe. That was the cover. That was the cover of the magazine. This was the German equivalent of Time magazine. Nobody gave it a second thought. You go to the community swimming pool in the local town, or you go to the beaches, and you know people are topless, people are nude, kids are running around naked. I mean, nobody gave it a second thought. Yeah, I remember one of the first times Louise and I went to Germany back in the 70s, and there was this rest stop which didn't have a rest stop, and there was a bus full of Italian tourists. And there was like 30 men standing in a row, whizzing in the grass. And as we're driving by on the highway, we're looking at this. Louise had a guy come over to the house to fix our washing machine when we lived in Stadtsteinach in Germany. And she looks out the front window. He's been working on the washing machine, right? I'm not home. I think I was in China at the time. Anyhow, she looks out the front window, and here's this guy peeing in the grass. And so she comes back in, and she says, how come you went out there and peed in the grass? And he says, I didn't want to dirty up your bathroom. It's like nobody cares. It's no big deal. Granted, this was a fairly rural area, but, I mean, it's no big deal. So is it, you know, are we all victims of Queen Victoria's hysteria? Could that be, with respect, with a tip of the hat, in fact, to Alan Colmes, who had Neil Horsley on his program. This was 6-8 months ago, and we put a little music bed to it. But this is a conversation. Neil Horsley is a guy who ran, I assume he still is, a website where he puts up pictures of abortion doctors and then puts X's through them after they've been murdered. One of the most virulent anti-abortion guys in America, talking with Alan Colmes. Some 6-8 months ago or thereabouts.
You are known for your anti-abortion and anti-homosexual views. You had sex with animals?
When you grew up on a farm in Georgia, your first girlfriend is a mule.
I'm not so sure that
that's
so...
You didn't grow up on a farm in Georgia.
Are you suggesting that everybody who grows up on a farm in Georgia has a mule as a girlfriend?
I'm saying that it has historically been the case. You people are so far removed from the
reality. Look, I'll admit, Neil, I'm a city boy. I don't know a lot about growing up on a farm.
Hello, welcome to domestic life on the farm.
But I think for you to say, there are a lot of people listening to you right, Neil, there are a lot of people listening to me right now who live on farms, are raising kids on farms, who grew up on farms, and I don't think they're dating Elsie right now. You know what I'm saying?
The fact of the matter is, don't know that in fact you experiment with anything that moves when you're growing up sexually, you're naive, and you know better than that. You know yourself. If it's warm and if it's damp and it vibrates, you might in fact have sex with it.
No, not me.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah,
no,
you know,
thanks.
Oh, come on. You know, I've had sex with anything that would move.
Right.
If we had a warm watermelon out in the field, I might give it a name.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red.
And I'm feeling a little nervous. So, thanks to Alan Colmes for having that conversation with Neil Horsley some time back. I increasingly am concerned that one of our biggest problems in this country and in England as well, you know, the kind of the United Kingdom remnant, meltdown remnant, is repression. You know, it's just and maybe it's repression that comes out as a tolerance for violence. Robin in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Robin, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Good morning. Well, first of all, the thing about the .XXX, I work in the adult entertainment industry, and we have for years wanted a .XXX sub. I can't remember what you call them, but we wanted
domain.
A .XXX. And the reason is twofold. One is one of the things you brought up. This, you know, if you go to a .XXX domain, you know what you're going to get, straight up. But the flip side is that, yes, a lot of us who have sites now are going to move, especially the smaller sites, not the large established like Playboy, that type of thing. But they'll move, too, eventually over time. And what we'll see
that was my point. I mean, the market is eventually going to move this. That's how typically it works. I mean,
exactly. Well, and the other thing is, too, is that these guys are so concerned for their kids, you would think immediately that the easiest thing in the world to do would be to block a domain type. .XXX, you block that, you know your kids aren't going there.
Yeah,
Yeah, his point was then it doesn't ban.com. But then, to ban.coms, you're talking about censorship. And do
exactly.
we really want censorship
exactly.
in the United States? And I think not. I think that that's a very, very dangerous slippery slope. And who for that matter, thank you, Robin, who for that matter gets to decide what is or what isn't pornographic content? 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
Welcome back. Talking back to the mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the chat room has gone off the edge. They've gone off the rail. I got to tell you, you can get to our live. We run a live chat room during this program every day. You can get to it over at TomHartman.com. We'll have to get a link over on the Air America Com website as well. But if you go to TomHartman.com, right up at the top of the page, it says live chat. It's free. You don't have to, you know, there's no spam. You do have to give yourself a username and password, and that's it. You know, it's real simple. It's very, very simple chat software. And let's see. Blue says, this brings a whole new meaning to counting sheep in bed. Another one says, I asked the sheep, how was it for you? She said, not bad. And then there's, you know, there's some of them I just can't even tell you. I'm sorry. The chat room has lost it. So I say to all of you, calm down. You know, it's just calm down. Blue GOP women are sheep. No. Keith and Kent Washington. Let's get back to rationality here. Keith and Kent Washington. Keith, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. It is a subject about which people are really adamant that their viewpoint be heard.
Yeah, you're talking about adult entertainment or sex and media or whatever.
Industry that is under fire from these people, and if you know, if they had their way, they would impose their morality on the rest of us, and that's just not something that will allow to happen.
Yeah, well, there's the, you know, the way that to seriously deal with this. I mean, the way that Robert Peters and I wrapped up our conversation was, you know, he said he's concerned about the kids, and I said I am too. I mean, I think that we need to have a conversation in America about how to protect children from exposure to extreme violence and extreme pornography and snuff movies and all the, you know, this whole spectrum of stuff that is out there. But it seems to me that the best way to do that is also the best way that you prevent unintended pregnancies, and it's also the best way that you prevent sexually transmitted diseases, and that's by education.
I agree, Tom, and ironically, that was the only sentence I heard. I was just leaving the house. But here's my statement. At his inauguration, Albertus Gonzalez used his 9-year-old sons as a bellwether, as a standard for what's appropriate for adults to see and hear. And that is not the standard.
Oh,
the things that I want access to are not appropriate for children, period.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
they are legal for me to use.
I'm right there with you, Keith. And in fact, the funny that I remember during the Reagan administration, the last time everybody was all hysterical about sex, and I think it was back, you know, during the time when they were trying to bust Larry Flint and whatnot. Ed Meese had his Commission on Pornography. Remember that?
But Barry Ward and those same principles are still alive in the Justice
Department.
Well,
let me tell you how I recall the story, and you can tell me if I'm right on this, because this is my recollection, is that Ed Meese went off and watched some absurd amount of pornography. My recollection is that he said that he had watched 600 hours. Maybe it was him and the commission watched 600 or 800 hours of hardcore pornography, kiddie porn, every kind of porn imaginable. I mean, you know, everything. And he came back and said, yes, this does damage people. I'm thinking, oh, that's what happened to Ed Meese.
But, well, I wouldn't characterize the story that way, but if 15 million adult videos are rented and sold in this country every year, it's not 3 million guys, you know, renting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You're absolutely right, Keith. And in fact, without pornography in hotels, the hotel industry right now would not be profitable.
And I would even take this other, you know, that transaction out of the, that's really not why I called. Why I called is the critical issue of separation of church and state. That's the more critical issue than just pornography. They want to impose their morality upon the rest of us, and it will not happen. We will not let it happen, period.
Yeah, well said, Keith.
More power to you, brother.
You too. Good to hear from you. Bill in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. How's the new program?
Oh, we're having fun. It's the old program with a whole bunch of new listeners. We're having a great time.
Listen.
As you know, you're a longtime listener, Bill.
Yes, I am. And, again, I wanted to tell you, my experience as a detective for many years is, first of all, I have my doubts about rape being a sexual crime, to tell you the truth. But anyway.
Yeah, well, that's been a long-standing debate, and
right.
I don't purport to be an expert on this. There are people who say it's purely violence. There are people who say it's purely sexual. There are people who say it's a combination of both.
And even,
I'm inclined to suspect that it's a combination of both, but I don't know. So.
Yeah, even I can't. I mean, I've seen a lot of victims, but I can't really make a complete positive judgment on that. But what I wanted to get to was the statistic your guest came up with about the increase in rapes.
Right.
And you have to remember, now, of course, I can only speak about Illinois criminal law authoritatively, you know. But
because you were a police detective in Chicago for 20-some-odd years.
Right. And in 1972, and, of course, Illinois was similar to many states, but there's always variations. So, but in 1972, we could not make out a rape case report if a man had been raped or if a husband had raped a wife.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because that's how the law read. The law was specifically read that way. A man couldn't be raped. I mean, that was completely out. Only women could be raped.
And a wife couldn't be raped.
And a wife
by law.
Be raped by
So after 72, when the law changed, of course the statistics would increase because you have new categories.
You're going to have an increase in the incident because the incidents occurred. It was just the labeling of the incidents that we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Bill. You always bring something. You always teach me something.
I wanted to mention something though. Last week when you were talking about hate crimes, and I tried to get through. You know, again, I have to Illinois law and when we passed the hate crimes bill here. I had, you know, misgivings about it, about the freedom of speech thing and everything like that.
Sure.
And it went to the Illinois Supreme Court, and the Illinois Supreme Court's opinion was that it's really, the hate crime isn't a crime in itself, it's an element and aggravation of a crime.
Right, intent. I mean, do you intend to kill somebody?
And they pointed out the fact that Illinois for years had part of its aggravation for many crimes was a crime committed, like a kidnapping or arson or whatever, while wearing a hood. Now, we all know who that was aimed at, right? That was aimed at the Klan.
Right, so that was early hate crime legislation.
Pardon?
That would have been early hate crime legislation.
Right, and exactly, and that's what they pointed out. They said many things can be constitutional, yet in commission of a crime can be an aggravating circumstance.
Yeah,
and I had to say, you know, you're right. You know, that's true.
Yeah, it's a good point, Bill. Thank you very much. It's as I said, it's always great to hear from you. I appreciate it. Christopher in Oakland, California. Hey, Christopher.
Hey, how are you?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I've worked in the porn industry, and I just wanted to comment on the guy earlier ranting about the XXX domain.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that we need the XXX domain. I mean, that's like one of the ways you're going to keep your kids away from pornography on the internet.
I do too. I think it'll be a very simple filter, and over time, I'm guessing that particularly the pornography that's the more quote extreme types will all gravitate to the XXX domain because you know they don't want to be in the .com area. They would
what's the problem?
Yeah. It seems to me like a good step, and then you can easily. I mean, in the chat room, folks were talking about how one of the folks in the chat room's wife had put a porn filter on his computer, and he couldn't use his computer anymore because it was so all encompassing that it was almost impossible to do a Google search anymore.
Right.
And as everything moves over to XXX, I think it'll make a whole lot of sense. Christopher, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Scott in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom, great show. Very quickly, I used to have a T-shirt that said, Top Censorship, which I think we all ought to start wearing them again.
Well, you know, was it Ashcroft covered up Lady Liberty? You know?
Yeah, well, that's what I was calling about. I mean, that gives you a rough idea of the mindset. You know, the you've got a marble statue in the hall of Department of Justice, and he covered her up because of her marble upper frontals. You know.
Yeah.
But a real telling film about this is called This Film Is Not Yet Rated. And if you haven't seen it, it's a documentary all about the rating system of films. And it's insane. The people who make up these rules are absolutely wacko.
Interesting. No, I haven't seen it, but I will look for it.
They will cover up, you know, TNA, but you can beat the hell, shoot the hell, bomb the hell out of anybody on celluloid, and nobody blinks an eye.
Yeah, and that's the weirdness of that is something that, you know, I pointed out, and I think frankly, you know, if we're going to be concerned about something, we should be concerned about violence, and institutionalized violence, which is called war, I think should be rightly labeled an obscenity. I'm not sure again that you know the extent to which we should be regulating obscenity, but if we're going to label something obscenity, war certainly should fall into that category. Scott, thanks for the call. Frank in New York, we have to take a break in about a minute. Frank, what's up?
Just a quickie. I think one of the reasons the XXX would be very valuable is because right now the filters are so bad that are used to filter out X. What's happening is that a lot of the X stuff is staying on, but things such as breast cancer or colon cancer or whatever are being blocked out.
Right, that was my point.
Because they have a bad word.
Yeah, that was my point. If you had the XXX domain, then you could have very simple filtering software. You just can't go to .XXX. And as I said, I believe the market over time, and probably fairly quickly, everybody except maybe Playboy.com, I mean, some of the big sites will still be there, but the bigger sites, you could probably also, you know, fairly easily filter for kids. This is good point. So anyhow, 45 minutes past the hour, and there's other things happening in the world too. We will see Seymour Hersh still talking about how Bush is intending to attack Iran and actually doing it right now. A short discussion of that as we come back right after this break. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back to the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of planet Earth and all other living things as well. Karen in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Karen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you for the segue into
You're welcome.
Hirschland.
Ah, yes.
I just want to say this is the second day in a row I've been calling directly in D.C., both my senators and my congressmen, and I've been trying to contact their defense person. I guess everybody has a couple of defense staff people. One does legislation, the other one does, you know, strategy and stuff like that.
You're talking about in the offices of your senators?
In the D.C. offices. I've been nagging them, you guys have got to read this Hersh article,
right.
And I want you to take special note of Hersh's charges that Bush is secretly funding the Sunnis. I want to know if those charges are true.
Yep.
And if they're true, why is he in office?
Right. Absolutely. Karen, good on you. Congratulations and thank you. I mean, that's what it takes. I mean, that's taking back democracy, and that's what's so very, very important. Well done and well said. In fact, here's Cy Hersh just yesterday.
Well, of course, they're very far along. They've been studying this forever. They're constantly redesigning, retooling. But right now, as I wrote, it's pretty obvious what's going on. In the last month or so, the president has been talking more and more about cross-border attacks and more about Iranian interference and threatening American lives. So it's not surprising they would fine-tune the targeting. to go after suspected training sites, et cetera, across the border and inside Iran. That's just normal, I think.
And you write that already some special operations forces, some U.S. intelligence forces have crossed the line and have gone into Iran. Is that right?
Oh, yes. That's been happening for months. There's been a lot of very aggressive cross-border activity. It's more than just casual.
It's more than just casual activity. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us, talkradionews.com, their website, and lots of great audio clips and whatnot there. Ellen, Cy Hirsch's bombshell, 2 days ago now it's been, with Wolf Blitzer. I'm still hearing very, very little about this from the political side of things, you know, from politicians.
You know,
I talked this morning with a congressman.
His article in The New Yorker seems to have just flown by everybody.
Yeah, I spoke this morning with a member of Congress, and I said, you know, I mean, personally, not with a staff person. And I said, you know, well, what about Cy Hirsch? He says that that George Bush is secretly funding Al-Qaeda and that he has the proof of it and that we've already essentially invaded Iran. And this member of Congress said, well, you know, I don't know about that. I'm going to have to look into it. And it's been 2 days.
That's one thing. The other thing that is very disturbing is the issue with Cheney and the bomb, because a lot of people in Washington right now are analyzing it and saying, wait a minute, if they did this, Cheney wasn't supposed to stay overnight. He did stay overnight. And
in Afghanistan. And that led to the death of 30-some-odd people.
That's right. And that may mean that security is compromised there as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Otherwise, how would they know to do that?
Oh, you know, in other words, they didn't know that he was going to stay overnight.
Exactly.
But somehow they did know that he was going to stay overnight because
exactly.
They blew up the bomb. Yeah. Interesting. Now, the question in my mind is, why did Cheney go to Afghanistan in the first place? Why would he put those people there at such risk by bringing in such a high-profile target as himself?
Well, because we're going to do things to Iran very shortly.
Oh, I know, but you know, if he wanted to talk to Hamid Karzai, why couldn't he call him up on the phone? What did he have to go to? You know,
Karzai come here, well dressed Karzai, which he does all the time.
Right. I can sort of understand going to Pakistan and delivering a strong message if that's what he did. In fact, the message that he delivered was, look out, the Democrats are actually going to do something about your failure to get Osama bin Laden and your support of, you know, Al-Qaeda training camps along the border in Waziristan. The Democrats are going to do something. And I guess that was enough of a threat that Dick Cheney felt he had to personally communicate that to the dictator of Pakistan. But, you know, why he had to go to Afghanistan.
My guess is that there are some high-level meetings dealing with Iran. With everything I see is gearing up for this. Every single thing.
Yeah.
I just don't see it as any other way.
Yeah. Well, that's you know, the price of gold has been going up the last couple of days. The price of oil is going up. It's almost like the markets. And Alan Greenspan yesterday talking about how there's going to be a recession, and now I guess the stock market is down quite a bit. Around the world.
Consumer confidence. Today's economic reports have consumer confidence up, but durable good orders are plunging, and home sales they're up, but the actual price that people are willing to pay for home sales has gone down. Actually.
Right. So, yeah, my point is that despite all the happy talk, when you look at the actual behavior, both of consumers and perhaps more significantly of the major players, the people who buy and sell gold and oil and the kind of commodities that tend to fluctuate wildly in the presence of war for a living, or currencies for that matter, what you see is that the American dollar is dropping like crazy. Gold is going up. Oil is going up. These are all the kinds of things that you would expect to have happen if the real movers and shakers of the world. And gold is right now at 683.60. I just looked at it. I mean, it's this is up, what, 30 bucks over the last couple of weeks?
It's gone.
These
up
are the things.
Right.
These are the harbingers of war, typically. Are they not?
Well, let me just, speaking of harbingers, guess who's going to be speaking while you're here in Washington, D.C. for CPAC?
Who's that?
Mr. Giuliani.
Oh, gee, what a surprise.
He's going to be there kissing.
He's going to be at CPAC? Right.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. You know, and in fact, you're going to have somebody there. Isn't Wendy going to be there, Wendy Wang?
Yes, but the Giuliani thing was just confirmed.
Interesting. Well, maybe he'll come on my program. We'll see.
Well, we will try it. Whatever influence I can with his press secretary, Sonny Mandel, I will try.
Well, that's great. Ellen, I appreciate it. Ellen's going to try and help get us some good conservative guests on the program here for Thursday and Friday when we're broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. at CPAC.org. Ellen, thanks a lot. TalkRadioNews.com. Good talking with you today. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio. Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, fair and slightly unbalanced.
And welcome back, my friends. The attack on law, lust, and liberty, is that what this is all about? This whole American War on Sex? America's War on Sex is a book by Marty Klein. We've been, in the last hour, we talked with Mr. Peters from Morality and Media. Robert Peters. No, I'm not going to make any jokes about that. Moralityandmedia.org. And this is the flip side of it. Marty Klein, PhD, Dr. Marty Klein, the author of America's War on Sex, the websites americaswaronsex.com and sexualintelligence.org. Dr. Klein, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom.
You suggest in your book, and I think brilliantly, that what's going on in the United States right now, and in fact, perhaps across much of North America, but particularly in the United States, is not so much an effort to protect our children or protect the victims of sex-based crimes, rape and things like that, as it is actually an assault on sexuality itself, just the pure essential nature, the sexual nature of human beings as human beings, as animals, or whatever you want to call that, and the idea of individual personal liberty.
Tom, you've summarized my book perfectly.
I thought
the brilliant part.
Yeah, well, it is brilliant. I've spent a fair amount of time on this book. Your Yes, They Really Said That chapter, in and of itself, is sufficiently shocking. Your stuff, you know, Battleground, the Internet, what's going on there. So the porn industry, you know, the battleground of the adult entertainment industry. Let me just toss it to you. We're talking to Dr. Marty Klein. He's the author of a new book, America's War on Sex, The Attack on Law, Lust, and Liberty. And let's take these three things one at a time. First of all, the attack on law. How is sex being used you fill in the blank, repressed, conservatives, whatever. How is it being used against them to attack law?
Well, in several ways. First of all, the government itself is changing the rules of the game. The government, both on the federal level, state, local levels, are changing the ways that people are allowed to function. The city of Phoenix has shut down all of the swing clubs in town. The state of North Carolina, the Christian Coalition, has targeted stores that sell DVDs or sex toys. Federal court in Alabama has just said that it's against the law to sell dildos and vibrators there. So
wait a minute. You have a right to a gun in Alabama, but not to a vibrator?
I'm sorry?
You have in Alabama, you have the legal right to own a gun, but not the legal right to own a vibrator.
That's right. That's right. And
what is wrong with this picture?
There are six states in the union where it's against the law to sell sex toys. But as you say, Tom, it's not only the government, it's not only state legislatures, and it's not only city councils, but it's also organizations like Morality and Media, the American Family Association, Family Research Council, Abstinence Clearinghouse. These organizations, which are receiving lots of money from the federal government, lots of money from state governments, these organizations are in a position to restrict people's opportunities to do what they damn well please in the privacy of their own homes or in the privacy of commercial establishments. And so,
now, I'm sorry, finish your sentence, sir.
No, go ahead.
How is it that these groups that you just named can be getting federal money, and yet I'm assuming you're not.
Well, you're right about that.
The ACLU certainly isn't. Nadine Strossen, the president of the ACLU, wrote the foreword to your book, and how'd this come about?
Well, it's actually a historical change in the way that the country is being run. It used to be that the federal government and the state governments provided certain kinds of social services, certain kinds of counseling for drug addiction, certain kinds of anti-violence, programs. And now the federal government and the state governments are giving money to organizations to provide these services that are explicitly religiously based. Catholic Charities of New York, Catholic Charities of California, other kinds of pregnancy crisis centers. These are explicitly religiously based organizations. The government gives them money to provide social services, and in fact, in a huge change, these organizations are now allowed to discriminate in hiring. So your tax dollars, Tom, are being used to hire counselors or to hire other kinds of staff people in federal and state programs that are only members of certain religious organizations. It used to be against the law to discriminate in hiring, and now the federal government and the state governments are actually paying organizations to say to people, we'll help you with your drug problem, we'll help you with your divorce, we'll help you with your pregnancy, but we will only do this with staff members who are members of certain religious organizations, and you have to swallow a certain amount of religious propaganda in order to get these services.
Which are paid for with my tax dollars and yours. Now, this is a change that came about with the Bush administration, Marty Klein?
Well, the Bush administration has certainly started the faith-based initiative.
But a lot of this goes back to Reagan, doesn't it, and Ed Meese?
Yes, actually, Ed Meese in 1986 was the attorney general, and he was the one who convened the Meese Commission, which was designed to prove that pornography was dangerous. The only problem was that after spending millions of dollars of my tax dollars, the Meese Commission was unable to find any damage that was caused by the use of pornography. And Senator Brownback and Ted Stevens of Alaska, they had their pornography hearings in Congress just last year. And they had people testifying that, my husband looked at pornography and it ruined my marriage. Or we have people testifying that people who use pornography, they go out and they commit crimes. But there's never been any good scientific study that proves that pornography is dangerous. And when you
Why is it, Marty Klein, that when I hear stories like this about Senator Brownback and Senator Stevens, these uptight right-wing Republicans convening their commissions on morality and pornography, that part of the picture that I'm imagining is them saying, as I recall Ed Meese did, now we have to go into closed session so that we can watch this stuff in our private offices so that we'll know what we're talking about.
Well, it's quite amazing that apparently pornography damages you and me, but it doesn't damage the censors who want to watch it in order to decide that it's not okay. It's
right. Didn't Ed Meese watch like several hundred hours of pornography and talk about how disgusted he was by the several hundred hours of pornography that he watched when he oversaw the commission?
It's like complaining about getting obscene phone calls, which you accept, collect. there are 50, according to the right wing, there are 50 million people who look at pornography on a regular basis. And obviously not all 50 million are going out and doing a bunch of crazy things.
Right.
So, which is good, But
yeah.
the federal government, now I guess they're done with the war on terror, and I guess they're done with making our streets safer. So now what they want to do is they want to dismantle the pornography industry in the United States, $10 billion a year industry. And can you imagine if the federal government decided to take apart, say, the meatpacking industry or the automobile industry? Imagine the federal government doing that without any representatives from those industries representatives of consumer groups.
No, I understand. And consumers, as you point out in your book, the consumers of pornography are reluctant to come forward and say, hey, wait a minute, what happened to my porn? So there's not a good constituency. We only have a minute left here. We're talking with Marty Klein, Dr. Marty Klein, his new book, America's War on Sex, the Attack on Law, Lust, and Liberty. However, the problem that these guys have, if they want to take apart this industry, is that the entire hotel industry in the United States would not be profitable without pornography. That the largest purveyors of pornography in the United States are some of the largest corporations in America. The cable companies, the hotel business, things like that. But there's a larger issue here, and that's the attack on liberty. Let me give you the last 30 seconds here to take a shot at that, how these guys are trying to undermine our core liberties.
Absolutely. The right wing and the religious right are using the attack on sex to undermine secular democracy, to undermine our rights to make decisions for ourselves. And when the President of the United States says the laws of this country should follow my religious beliefs, that's very similar to what the President of Iran says. And so it's not just that the government is trying to take away our rights to look at pornography, or morality and media is trying to take away our rights to watch The Sopranos or whatever we want on television. It's that they want to reshape the American contract so that Americans no longer have the choices to do what they want in private the way that
they want. America is no longer America, ultimately. And a terrible thing. Dr. Marty Klein, americaswaronsex.com, sexualintelligence.org, his blog. Thanks a lot for being with us, Dr. Klein.
Thank you, sir.
16 minutes past the hour. Back. Telling the truth that the multinational corporations would really rather you weren't all that familiar with. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. There's also a message board there. And, then of course, our blog over at AirAmericaRadio.com. And our telephone number, 1-866-303-2270. Doug in Staten Island, New York. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Pleasure
thank
to talk
you for
to you. Well, thank you. Listen, you know, some couple of things you were just talking about. Just one thing I wish, if possible, if you get a gentleman by the name Mark Benjamin on about the soldiers. He used to be with UPI, he's with Salon.com right now. He's received awards from soldiers associations and
Great. David, my producer, is making a note right now.
Yeah, he's brought up a lot of these things, and he talks about Ward 51 with the soldiers, you know, having the post-traumatic stress disorder
right
there.
Yeah.
And
but that's not what you called about, Doug.
No, it's not. Regarding, you know, it's interesting that these people seem to rail against the things that they are afraid of themselves. You know, we read about these things like in Kevin Phillips' American Theocracy or Esther Kaplan's With God on Our Side. There's also a woman by the name of Michelle Goldberg who wrote The Rise of Christian Nationalism. She talks mm-hmm. about these mega churches opening one every 2 days. These are large organizations, and they basically decry the whole situation about sex and you know, not just about abortion rights and stuff, but also
what they're really trying to do, Doug, in my opinion, is they're trying to roll back the Enlightenment. They're trying to take us back to pre-1600. This is a challenge not just to modern secular democracy. Well, it is. It's modern secular democracy, which has its roots in the Enlightenment. I mean, let's go after Newton. Let's go after, actually, you could say they want to go back before the Renaissance, I suppose.
They are anti-Enlightenment, Tom. You really hit the nail on the head. I mean, you look at the Salvation Army. They are the second largest charity, okay? Second largest charity in this country, okay? Now they're receiving millions of dollars from the administration, upwards of $50 million from what I understand. And now they are, all of a sudden, they have changed things. They Christianized their services to the point after the faith-based initiative. They got rid of Jews, gays, and non-Christians. They instituted forms where you have to, if you're applying for employment or presently employed, You have to give the name of your pastor or priest, your church or congregation. And these are people that, that have very much, what do you call, policy direction into our, not only into our government domestic policies, but also into the military. When you look at guys like Eric Prince and Voss from Amway, and these guys that are, you know, you have the Christianization of the Air Force Academy in Colorado.
Yeah, this is the whole Christianist movement in the United States of having a religion essentially take over government. I mean, it's just like the Islamist movement. You know, Doug, excellent point, and thank you very much for calling and for making it and for listening there in New York. And in fact, I'd just like to extend that two steps. Jefferson and Madison, you know, had a series of interchanges, letters back and forth, back in the 1780s, as I recall. It's been a while since I read Jefferson's letters, but I wrote a book called What Would Jefferson Do? In fact, yesterday I got a couple of emails from people saying that stuff about Jefferson and slavery, where'd you get that from? I was essentially reading or sharing with you out of my own book called What Would Jefferson Do? Which is based on having read, you know, the 20-volume set or a good chunk of it of Jefferson's collected works. Anyhow, Jefferson and Madison were both in favor of there being a wall between church and state, but for different reasons. And it's really interesting to note this. Jefferson was concerned that if the religious folks ever had political power, that they would exploit that political power to try to impose their religious perspective or their lifestyle perspective on Americans. And he felt that that would be very, very wrong and very unhealthy. Jefferson was the guy who took the first four Gospels, the first four books of the New Testament, the Gospels, and he deleted all the miracles. And that is, in other words, portraying Jesus as basically a philosopher. And that's still in print as the Jefferson Bible. It has been continuously in print for 230 years. Okay, that was Jefferson's concern. Madison, on the other hand, who was explicitly and overtly a Christian, was concerned that if government ever gave money to churches, that it would corrupt the churches. So Madison was afraid that the combination of government and religion would corrupt Christianity. Jefferson was concerned that the combination of government and Christianity would corrupt government. And now we look around us and we see that they were both right. Neither one of them, I mean, you read their letters, and neither one of them imagined that it could get so bad that the other one could be the one that was right. And now we look around, and they were both right. Christianity is being corrupted. Government is being corrupted. This is not a good thing for American democracy. We need to wake folks up about it. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain. Just don't tell Limbaugh, he'll want some.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Dream is fading now, I'm staring at the door. I know it's over cause my feet have hit the cold floor. Check my reflection, I ain't feeling what I see. It's no mystery. Whatever happened to a passion I could live for? What became of the flame that made me feel more? And when did I forget that I was made to love you?
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. In fact, just to finish up that Jefferson-Madison story, just a little more ammunition for your, you know, to help you win the water cooler wars. The James Madison became president after Thomas Jefferson left in 1808. The election of 1808, James Madison won the election, and so in 1809 he became president. And two interesting things about his presidency. One, he was president during the invasion of the United States. Bush talks about how 9/11 was like a Pearl Harbor event. We were invaded, we were struck and all that kind of stuff. Well, James Madison was president during the War of 1812 when we were invaded by Canada and England, And his wife, Dolly, was alone in the White House, and she cut out of a frame this picture of George Washington, rolled it up, and smuggled it out of the White House in the dead of night because the British soldiers were coming and the Canadian soldiers were coming, and they took the White House, and they burned it the next day. So here you had the White House in flames, and James Madison, it didn't occur to him to say, you know, this country's under attack. We need to do away with the Fourth Amendment right to privacy, and the Fifth Amendment right to habeas corpus, and the Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial, and the Seventh and Eighth Amendment's rights to due process and to make bail and to have a jury of your peers. We need to do away with all that. He never said that. And when George W. Bush says, oh, well, you know, we're under attack, therefore we need to do away with civil liberties, he's spitting on the grave of James Madison, number one. Number two, back to the point that I was making earlier, James Madison's first veto was in his first year in office in 1809, as I recall. It might have been 1810. In any case, his first veto was a veto of a piece of legislation that was passed by Congress to give money to a church in Washington, D.C., to care for homeless people and hungry people. And he vetoed it because he said this money should not be funneled through a church because it will corrupt Christianity. He said the government should be doing this itself. We should be giving the money directly to the institution that is caring for these people, not a religious institution. And that's ultimately what they did. They rewrote the legislation, and you know, the poor houses at the time they were called were actually paid for in Washington, D.C. with federal funds, 100% of which, by the way, came from tariffs. But that's a whole other rant. So anyway, a lot on our plate here, a lot to talk about today, a lot in the news. 37 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number if you want to drop into our live chat room, TomHartmann.com. Scott in Auburn, Massachusetts on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the program. What's up?
How you doing? I want to point out that I was wondering if Lieberman is holding the Democratic domestic agenda hostage with his threats to go over to the Republican Party if he doesn't get his way.
You know, I don't think so. And this is a real interesting one, because a couple of days ago, as I recall, might have been yesterday, somebody called in and said, no, wait a minute. The Senate was able to flip when Jim Jeffords changed parties or left the Republican Party and went independent because... Gore would have been the tie-breaking vote. When Clinton left the presidency and Bush came in, because there was a Democrat who was during the end of the last term of the Senate, could have been the tie-breaking vote. The Democrats allowed there to be a rule change, which said that if somebody flipped a party, that it would change the majority of the Senate. It would change, you know, the designations of who's in charge of what committees, basically the power structure. That was not instituted for this Congress. That rule change was not instituted for this Congress. And so, according to several articles that I've read, and there's been a long discussion about this over at Democratic Underground, you can check it out, and people looking into it, if Lieberman were to leave the Democratic Party right now, it would not flip the Senate. And now, what they'd have to do is the nuclear option. The Republicans would then have to say, okay, we're going to have a vote and we're going to change the rules of the Senate so that the Senate is flipped. And if Lieberman was voting explicitly with the Republicans, I suppose that could happen. But that, you know, whether or not they could get enough Republicans to go along with the nuclear option, who knows? But I think Lieberman at first thought that he could flip the Senate and was trying to use that as a club. And then somebody pointed out to him, sorry, we didn't change the rules this time of the Senate, and you can't flip the Senate by changing parties this time. And so that's why he's been so muted recently. That's my take on it, Scott. So we'll see how it plays out. Thanks for the call, though, and for pointing that out. By the way, Joe Lieberman just, you know, an hour or two ago, talking, he's in the Senate here. This is quite amazing. This is over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org. He said today that he's upset that critics have been questioning the Bush administration's intelligence on Iran. He says our skeptical reaction is unwarranted. He says, I wouldn't start with suspicion of intelligence that Iran is up to no good in Iraq, right? In fact, here he is. This is Joe Lieberman.
I thought that the reaction to the briefing first given in Baghdad and then later here about Iranian involvement in Iraq.
Now, this is the briefing that was on the front page of the newspapers where it said, unnamed military sources say Iran is supplying weapons to Iraq, right? And nobody would go on record about it. That's what he's talking about.
Showed two danger points. The first was that a lot of people responded both in government and the Congress and in the media with a suspicion.
Gee, a suspicion, because nobody will go on the record, and because this administration has done this exact same thing before, and because nobody from the military spokesman says this has to be in a closed-door room, no cameras, no tape recorders, you can just barely take notes, and you can't name me. But we're not supposed to be suspicious, says Joe Lieberman.
To the intelligence that came out that I thought was unwarranted. I mean, we give a lot of money to the intelligence community, taxpayer money every year. You're on our side. Doesn't mean you're flawless. You make mistakes. We've seen that over our history. But I wouldn't start with suspicion toward what you're recommending. I thought we had that there. The other part of it was also troubling, which was what Senator Levin referred to before, the reluctance of people in the administration to draw a conclusion that I would call highly probable.
Now, get this. Now he's concerned that the Bush administration is reluctant to say that Iran is responsible for the disaster in Iraq and therefore we should bomb Iran. You get this? Joe Lieberman is out ahead of the Bush administration in being a war hawk. He's saying the Bush administration is too reluctant to draw conclusions from the intelligence. He wants it to be like Doug Feith and the Office of Special Plans in the Pentagon. Let's stovepipe some intelligence here.
In other words, defensiveness, I dare not call it timidity, based on previous criticism of conclusions drawn from intelligence.
So see, he's talking about the Bush administration is too timid now with this information about Iran.
It would be, to me, shocking if the Quds Force was carrying out this mission in Iraq without Ayatollah Khomeini knowing it. And I just think we have to count on you at moments like that to tell us what is, may not be certain, but is highly probable based on everything we know.
So this is Joe Lieberman basically poking the intelligence branch of government to say, hey, give us something here we can use to attack Iran. Please. Amazing. Jude in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Jude, what's up?
Hey, I wish you well, Tom.
Thank
Boy,
you.
The diversions are just, they're unconscionable. There's just so
many of
them.
Oh, the stuff's flying all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, just very much. I wanted to bring up, if you had heard, on last Tuesday, Attorney General Gonzalez announced a new program out of the Department of Justice called First Freedom Project. And it's going to be under the auspices of the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ. But the interesting piece, Tom, is he made the announcement to the Executive Committee Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. And you can read that. You can Google up the Justice Department First Freedom Project. And you can also go into the Associated Baptist Press, and they give a whole piece on that, and it goes back into the business.
It was in the media when he did it, Jude. I mean, this is another contamination I don't think this was a secret, was it?
No, but it was just, you know, it was interesting. There were so many other diversions going on last week that very few people politically here that I had spoken with. But the interesting piece came out that the National Council on Churches, their general secretary, Bob Edgards, thought that was very, you know, was unsettling, considering that just one denomination would be have privy to this information. So it just, it behooves us. I mean, that's our First Amendment right, you know, that no establishment of religion. And look at how this administration
is. Oh, absolutely. And they're stepping all over it. Jude is spot on. And we'll gather a little more information and inform our listeners more about that. Marty in Baja, California. You have to take a break in just a minute, Marty. What's up?
Okay. Well, I basically want to agree with Marty Klein. And it sounds like a very interesting book.
Yeah, it is.
About the fact that the war on, basically America seemingly has had a war on sex. And, you know, perhaps I think maybe it goes back to the fear that we would decrease our population, you know, as Europe has done, and therefore not have enough. Europe literally doesn't have enough
troops to go fight.
Yeah, it could be, but, you know, the continental Europe doesn't have this kind of paranoia. Only the United Kingdom does. I think this goes back to the neurosis of Queen Victoria. Queen Victoria was crazy about sex. I mean, she was nuts crazy about sex in a negative way. She was terrified or horrified by it or something. And I think the Anglo-Saxon world has been contaminated by it. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, listening carefully for the sponsors on our local stations, our local affiliate stations, and letting those sponsors know that you're using their products, buying their products, recommending their products, passing the word along, and also supporting our national sponsors as well. Sacred Grounds Coffee, for example, sacredgroundscoffee.com, all organic, all fair trade. Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, 1-800-511-MAX. The Organic Wine Company, 1-AAA Eco Wine, imported French organic wine, 1-AAA Eco Wine, and Purina One Natural Blends, 866-380-MEOW. So that's how you can support the program. Anyhow, welcome back. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Vinny in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Vinny, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Hey, listen, the IAEA just came out and said basically the information that they've gotten has proved to be wrong. And they said that from the IAEA just yesterday on Democracy Now!, I think Amy Goodman had it, said that, that there was no evidence at all, and that since 2002, pretty much all the intelligence that's come to us has proved to be wrong.
Yeah, well, Mohammed al-Baradei was saying that in 2002.
Yeah,
him and Hans Blix. I mean, Hans Blix in front of the United Nations, saying, you know, this stuff is like a witch hunt. I mean, this is like medieval time. And
so Hans Blix, when people were convinced they were witches, and then they looked for them, they certainly found them. And this is a bit risky. I think we were more.
And he goes on to say we were more judicious and, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, the part where he says, I don't understand where you could have 100% surety of the weapons and 0% knowledge of where they are.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly. And you know, good point, Vinny.
But here's
and
the
thanks.
Other thing, Tom.
Yeah,
here's
go
the
ahead.
Other thing.
Okay.
Number one, the AP has reported three times, December and January, that Saudi Arabia has been shipping not just armaments and money like usual, but surface-to-air armaments. We had three helicopters go down in 2 weeks, in the
That's
first
right.
2 weeks of December. Then we had
I've been pointing this out on this program, Vinny, for 3 months now, ever since the Associated Press first announced that, in fact, one of the members of the Saudi royal family was involved in one of these private fundraisers where $25 million was raised, and the best guess is that it was used to buy surface-to-air missiles, shoulder-fired missiles, and then, boom, all of a sudden, in December, January, February, U.S. helicopters are suddenly being shot out of the air in Sunni territory, and Saudi Arabia is a Sunni country.
And
you're spot on.
We shout about Iran. We play this three-card Monty each time.
You're
we shout
exactly
about Iran,
right.
Even though the National Intelligence Assessment said that 92% of our kids are being killed by Sunnis.
That's right. You're absolutely right, Vinny. You're spot on. And you know, I've been ranting about that for some time here, and I wish the media would get with the program and let's start telling people what's actually going on. That, you know, I mean, how many of those hijackers on 9/11 were from what country? Paul in Bow, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for bringing intelligence and compassion to the radio.
Well, you're welcome. I hope I can accomplish those things. What's in your mind?
Well, looking forward to the 2008 presidential Democratic race, and I'm not that concerned if Hillary apologizes for her vote for Iraq, but what I want her to apologize for is NAFTA and the World Trade Organization and selling wealth down the river.
Sign me up for that petition.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not just, but the problem is it's not just Hillary. I mean, this is right across the board. Virtually every Republican and solidly probably half of the Democratic Party. They're still drinking the Kool-Aid. They're still reading Tom Friedman. They're still, believing that, the world is flat. That tariff stuff that built America over 230 years, built the most powerful industrial nation in the world. It was a good thing we got rid of that and made the world safe for multinational corporations.
Yeah. And the next round of jobs to go overseas are all the computer jobs.
I think they should do.
You can do computer work from any place. Well, if you can do it from any place in the United States.
Won't have to. I mean, here, with Supreme Court, we can outsource that to India. You got John Roberts, the Chief Justice here, complaining about the fact that he only makes $220,000 a year, whatever it is, saying, there's a crisis in the judiciary because he doesn't make enough money. I'm sure we can find somebody in India who would do that. I mean, let's bring this home to these guys. You're spot on and good point. And Derek in Napa, California. Derek, you got the closing 30 seconds here. What's up?
How you doing, Tom? I love your show. I wanted to go back to what you were saying about pornography. I find it interesting that they bring up children and what children are exposed to, but when you look at what the American people thought was shocking and offensive just 50 years ago, or go 50 years back from that, an ankle or a bathing suit of what, a bikini would have been completely outrageous then. But we've become desensitized to that over time. But I find that if they take the
Has it become desensitized, or is it that we've kind of gotten back toward normal? Because back before Queen Victoria, nobody gave a hoot about seeing somebody's ankle. And I think that we've been kind of moving back towards sanity, frankly. But Derek, you make a good point that obscenity standards change over time. Just carving stuff into law is dangerous, dangerous stuff. Coming up tomorrow, Wednesday, on the next Tom Hartman program, conservative Dan Griswold says bad news in the trade deficit means good news in the economy. Oh, yeah? And our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, Renee Denfield is here about the dark, violent, and tragic world of street families. That and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.